the talk. And if you would like to hear talks on specific subjects, you can always write me. I return all the Facebook messages. My last name is Korda, K-O-R-D-A. So just Facebook me. Any requests for subjects that you'd like to hear about. On the web, there's some kind practitioners have put up about now 80 or 90 of my talks on a podcast site. So if you look up New York Dharma Punks, that comes up. And there's talks on virtually every conceivable subject that has to do with stress and suffering. So, and the relief thereof, I might add, it's not just on the dark side, it's also on the tools we have available for us. All right, so that said, tonight I'd like to talk a little bit about expectations. Expectations. So we all carry around quite a lot of these expectations, which some people joke are planned resentments or planned suffering. Besides the obvious, we all expect to hopefully have a long, healthy life. We would like that expectation to come true. I've seen, though, expectations that people have that are quite hysterical and funny to behold. Anybody who ever takes the subway in New York, when the subways in New York pull into the station, if the door doesn't open instantaneously, invariably, there will be somebody who will start kicking and punching the door as if that will make it open quicker and will bring a fruitful trip to, about. Of course, when it snows 24 inches, people instantly expect the streets to be cleared the next morning. There's a general state of uproar when it's not. There's expectations. When I was a kid and I used to fly, I remember distinctly being on a plane that was circling the airport looking for a runway for an hour, and nobody complained. Recently, when the same thing happened, I heard loud moans and threatened lawsuits, and we all have this sense that we should, a sense of entitlement, basically, that we bring into all of our lives. And when you look, though, at the areas of our lives where we have the greatest, or we carry around these expectations, some of which we're not even aware of, we can see really just how off base this sense of guarantee that we carry around with us. I've sort of, in my head, thought of four areas. There's many more, but there's the body, the mind, our friends and loved ones, and then there's the social contract. Our bodies, we take totally for granted most of the time. We expect it to be quiet, carry us around the city, get us to our work, sit there quietly for hours and hours as we stare at a computer or whatever we do. And then we say, I take care of myself, because we give it a 30-minute yoga or cardiovascular, and then we tell it to be quiet, wait until we feed it. And when you really look at the body, there's so many subsystems that are mutually dependent, and any little thing that goes wrong could bring about a swift demise. We have, of course, organs and glands, and as soon as I start talking about the body, I show how completely ignorant of it I am, because generally it breaks down with me saying organs and glands, and then my brain goes blank, but bones and cardiovascular and gastrointestinal, and there's lymph nodes that do something, and we have a spleen, which is my favorite part of the body because I like the sound of it. So all of it apparently is interlocking and working like clockwork, but really when you think about it, it's a miracle that we survive from one day to the next, because any little imbalance can cause devastation. And then the second area that we bring this really unbelievable sense of expectation is the mind. If you ever study neuroscience, I'm sort of a neuroscience geek, which sounds good when you say it, but actually kind of sucks when you actually have to read through the damn books. But anyway, there's so many different neurotransmitters, hormones, subsystems of the mind, so many different synaptic and receptors that have to be working perfectly for sanity to occur. And even the slightest disruption in the production of dopamine or serotonin, glutamates, acetylcholine, oxytocin, adrenaline, any slight imbalance can bring about huge disruptive personality changes. And yet most of us are not aware of this either. We sort of take for granted the oxygenation and the complex firing of neurons through synapses to their axonic receptors, and we just sort of assume that every day we're going to wake up and we'll basically be the same type of personality. And it really is actually quite miraculous that that actually occurs, because so much has to work for us to have a continuous experience. Then on top of that, there is the relationships we have with other people. If you think, if from my description of the mind working, that it's amazing that we have consciousness that's basically the same day in and day out, then imagine multiplying that by 2 or by 10. Imagine all the little nuances that diversions of meanings that could be misunderstood. All the facial expressions and all the reading of body states and all the social contract and everything that goes into communication. If you've ever done any reading of the West German school of philosophy about all the things that go into one human being understanding another, it's really amazing that two people can have a conversation where they even are basically on the same subject, or even remotely understanding each other. And of course, we all have different agendas and different self-preserving goals. And yet, somehow, we all, most of the time, manage to cooperate and get along, and we get wildly thrown off base if somebody says or does the slightest thing that irks us. It's amazing that it doesn't happen all the time. And then on top of that, there's the expectations we bring of the world. It's pretty amazing that we actually have indoor plumbing, and that throughout the cold winters that there's indoor heating, that we can get around the city through subways, and that there's something called the intertube, the web itself, which actually allows us to get instantaneous information. And I know myself, I cop to it. When I work from home and the intertube goes down, I get thrown into a state for a moment until I breathe and relax. And I'm often immediately calling up Time Warner with anger in my voice. More than anger in my voice, in my very heart. So we have all these expectations, and when you really look at it, there's so much that can go wrong all the time. There's so much of life is fragile, and really amazing. The Buddha said that being born into a healthy human existence is rare. He used one of his great Buddha metaphors as somebody throwing a tire tube into the ocean, and a blind sea turtle rising up from the depths and its head poking through that single tube. It's pretty rare. I have no idea numerically what that comes to, but trust me, that doesn't happen all the time. They should do that in SeaWorld, right? Okay, I'm just being ridiculous tonight. So there's so much that can go wrong in all the areas, and yet we have these expectations which bring about countless suffering, as we've talked about. People, because of these expectations, when any of the slightest things go wrong with our body, with our mind, with our interrelations with other people, with, you know, when the subway gets stalled for a little while, we just get thrown into a tizzy. And so there's so much suffering brought about by these expectations. So why do we have them? One, well, we have them for two reasons that jump to mind. The first is that if we really were constantly aware of how fragile everything is, how inconsistent and how liable our entitlements are to not be met, there would be an almost constant state of discomfort. So to a certain degree, we do need a certain amount of entitlement, or not entitlement, expectation, because if we really walked around knowing that anything could fall apart at any moment, to a certain degree, we might be paralyzed by it. So a certain amount of reasonable expectation is to be expected, but most of us carry this far over from just the expectation of that are most minimal that we need to get by to having expectations about everything. We expect to get to work quickly, though in life we see all the time that there are delays. We expect people to be easy to get along with, when all the time we see that's not the case. So we let our expectations go well beyond where they're useful, into the realm of where they cause suffering. And the second reason expectations are there is because, let's face it, it would be almost impossible to plan for the future if we didn't have a certain amount of expectations. If we didn't expect to live for a few more months, it would be very difficult to plan a vacation, or not as easy. So you get the idea. But again, we allow these expectations to run out of control when we bring them into every endeavor in our lives. And whenever anything doesn't meet our expectations, based on we expect people to behave in very limited, narrow ways, and any time that anybody does anything that's outside of it, like we don't get all the attention that we believe we deserve all the time, or somebody does something that we don't believe in our limited scope of the world is 100% appropriate, then we get pissed off. So there's so much suffering and stress that's brought into our lives due to this expectation. So the two reasons that expectations manage to stay about for so long is, A, we really don't examine closely the truth of life. We don't look at life with what the Buddha called panacchaku, which is the eye of wisdom, the eye that really investigates. And we don't ask ourselves, well, wait a second, is this expectation that I've been carrying around that people should behave exactly the way I think they should, is this a expectation that is, A, grounded on any real experiential reality? Or is this just something that I'm carrying around? Most of the time we'll see, in fact, people pretty much most of the time don't behave in the way we expect or think they should, and that it's based on basically our own agendas, the way we think people should behave. And another reason that expectations can continue so unguarded is because we don't really think that we're liable to the same events that happen to other people. We see other people get sick. We see other people grow old. We see other people die. We see other people have miserable things happen to them. We see other people get disappointments, and other people are treated not always skillfully. And we somehow think, well, that's the other people. That's not me. I don't fit into the other people rule because I'm special. I'm different. I'm unique. Maybe that happens to everyone else, but it won't happen to me. So it's a willful denial. It's a willful state of what the Buddhists called avijja, or root ignorance, where we see old age, sickness, death, disappointment, being separated from things we love, being with things we don't love. We see that happening to people all around us, and yet we think deep somewhere that we're exempt, and when it happens to us, we become shocked. And what's wrong? I'm sick. What's wrong? I'm getting old. What's wrong? I just got fired. What's wrong? I just had somebody say something mean to me. What's wrong? And of course, there's nothing wrong. That's what's called life. That's what happens in it. So, there is some ways. Well, before I jump to the ways out, I'll say that the core way we build up expectation is what the Buddha called Sakkaya Ditti. And Sakkaya Ditti means carrying around the story of who I am. I am smart. I am funny. I am tall, short. I am a good person. I am a hard worker. I am dependable. I am a good father, mother, sister, brother. I am this, I am that. And this I am is a huge form of expectation. It's built up over a series of willfully not seeing all the things we do that don't fit into this I am story. For example, I love to think that I'm a basically smart guy. And so I conveniently overlooking all the profoundly idiotic things that I say in my life because they're inconvenient. And if I do catch myself or get called out on them, well, then I say, well, I'm having an off day. That's not me. So that's not who I am. Even though there are other things that apparently are who I am, there are some things who I am not that I do. So it's really a game we play. It's a game that's based on attaching and building up expectations to a certain core state of being that we think we'll always be. And that, unfortunately, as the Buddha said, this tendency to tell stories about ourselves, Sakkaya Ditti, builds up a lot of future stress and suffering. My dad used to tell the story to me all the time. I'm a self-sufficient guy. I don't need anyone. I'm totally capable of taking care of myself. And of course, towards the end, when he got Parkinson's and he required our help all the time, he suffered enormously because it completely undercut the story of I am independent, I am self-sufficient that he carried around for so long. The other areas where we build up expectations and attachments, the Buddha said, are primarily in attachments and expectations about the things that bring us pleasure, make us feel good quickly. One of the things I have a lot of expectations about is my morning iced coffee. I drink it throughout the year, and if I find it difficult to get, I am almost assuredly grouchy, and stress and suffering arise and bounds. And I have a fondness for the spinach pie over, I shouldn't even say that aloud lest any of you sneak around and get there first at the Whole Foods. But anyway, so if I get there and they don't have that damn spinach pie, the expectation of it causes the very real possibility, I assure you, of stress. And then there's our views and opinions of the world, which we have expectations about the way people should believe and be, and the way politicians and corporations and all this should act. And of course they do act horribly. But it's the expectations that they should be doing different than they actually do that in turn causes so much more stress and suffering. There's nothing wrong with taking to the streets, protesting, getting involved, being someone who tries to change the world. But I've found that that can all happen without this sense of expectation. We can change and be part of a solution by simply seeing that there is suffering and being determined to do what we can. But when we don't carry that sense of expecting it to change in the way we want, we're met with so much less disappointment. And all the times I've spent working with people, I've seen that when I expect the spiritual path or the work that I do to have instant or visible change, that's when I am often disappointed. So the clue or the key is to do work, to participate, to be part of the solution, but to do it from a motivation that will not cause us stress and suffering. And finally, the last is our habits. They also are expectations. For example, if I don't get my exercise some days, or, you know, if I'm not feeling up to it, I get disappointed. Some people have expectations of always being able to meditate in the morning, and then when they can't, they feel deprived and they don't meditate at night or whatever. So those are the four areas. And the key is to realize that the way to reduce expectations is, first of all, to really notice when we're stressed out and suffering and ask ourselves, well, what did I expect? What did I expect is such a huge tool for investigation when somebody acts unskillfully. When we say, well, I really wanted them to act like a good person, that's not what I mean. That's sort of dumb. What I mean is, I really wanted them to say blah, 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 blah when I said blah, 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 blah. Then when we see how specific and detailed our expectations are, and we reflect, well, maybe they're coming from an entirely different place, or maybe they have something going on, or maybe there's a whole story going on here that I'm not seeing, or maybe I'm just framing the story very narrowly. It's a very important tool also to, as we said at the beginning, to investigate again and again and again. One of the things the Buddha talked about is in meditation to scan through the body, and as we did when the renunciate was here, to reflect on all the different parts of the body that have to be working to bring life about, and to think about all the different parts of the mind and everything that has to be working just to have life. This kind of reflection is very powerful, because when we stop bringing this expectation of unending health into the picture, a lot of the other expectations that we carry around with us tend to go away. When we look carefully and we really, with our heart, take in the suffering of other people and don't immediately explain it away due to some behavior of theirs, if we really see with our hearts compassionately how other people suffer and all the horrible things that happen at times, then it's much more difficult to carry around our expectations about this guarantee. If we really see that people start out life dependent and end off life dependent and often unable to make decisions for themselves, then if we see that with our hearts, we're much less likely to carry around this unending expectation that we will be able to put off our happiness into the future. Because, oh, I've got 20, 30, 40 more years on this planet. I don't have to start prioritizing my practice, prioritizing being skillful, being helpful, being generous. I don't have to do any of that. I can do some of that, but I don't have to do it soon, because after all, I've got so much more time. Another tool that's really useful is the five reflections. We said earlier how the I am this, I am that, I am special, I am intelligent, I am causes so much stress and suffering. The way the Buddha undercut that is by having these five reflections where monks say, I am of the nature to grow old. I am of the nature to become sick. I am of the nature to die. All the things and people that are important to me, I will eventually be separated from. Wow, happy stuff, as I say. And then all that I will be heir to are the results of my actions. But it's very important that we do these reflections, because when we do see how short and fleeting and fragile is this mortal coil, as Shakespeare said, we're much more likely to bring a sense of appreciation into the mix. We really appreciate when things go well, when people are compassionate. We really appreciate it when we do have an effortless trip into work. We really appreciate it when we do wake up and we feel basically okay. We really do appreciate it when we have another day that we feel healthy, where we are capable of moving around. This is really important to get in touch with, because we will not always have these things. We will not always have people that are compassionate. We will not always have a job to go to, or a healthy body, or the things that we are taking for granted. So it's really important to reflect on the fragility that's involved all the time, so that we, in fact, then bring and get the most out of this brief period of health that we are granted. Finally, when people hear, well, okay, I should let go of these expectations and these attachments, what is true lasting peace or nibbana or enlightenment? You know, it's nothing that you can attach to or expect. And interestingly enough, the core part of enlightenment, of true inner peace, is letting go. Is actually letting go of the things that we've been clinging to, the expectations and all the things that we carry around, the stories about who I am, the role playing, all that. When we let go of, we see how much effort they really require to sustain. And when we let go of all the expectations that we carry around about the shoulds, how people should do this and the world should be this, and we fall into this state of really a sense of awe at what's going on in this moment, that we do have a breath, that we do have a body, that we do have a mind, that we do have other spiritual practitioners around us, this letting go, this action, which cannot be grasped onto or clung to, it's a forever a letting go, a peaceful allowing to release. This becomes the core movement of lasting happiness. And it's nothing that can be clung to. Because the moment you try to cling and grab onto it and say, aha, I've become enlightened, look at this, look at me, that very action of clinging, the mind grabbing around to it, is what runs counter to the very spirit of true peace, which is a letting go. So, that's a little talk on expectations. I hope it gave you something to think about. And now's your chance to talk about anything or raise any questions about tonight's talk, and I hope that you got something out of it. So thanks for being patient and listening.